Welcome back. You're listening to A State Divided, HB2 and Transgender Rights, a special report by North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Elizabeth Baer.
And I'm Jeff Tiberi. After state legislators passed House Bill 2 last year, transgender rights took center stage in North Carolina and across the United States. The question of bathroom access pushed transgender people and their advocates into the spotlight. This happened as other high-profile figures like actress Laverne Cox and retired Olympic athlete Caitlyn Jenner became increasingly public about their own gender identity and transition.
But for a lot of North Carolinians, understanding transgender rights and forming opinions is complicated.
If the transgender is a woman that feels like a man and wants to go to the man bathroom, he should be able to go to the man's bathroom without being harassed.
22-year-old Bricia Felix was exercising on a recent morning outside the YMCA in Henderson. That's about 45 minutes north of Durham. She pushed her 3-year-old son Miguel along in a stroller. Felix says she's heard about HB2 and supports a repeal of the law, but she's also concerned about her son's safety in public bathrooms. What scares her most is the moment she has to let him go into a bathroom on his own. Those maternal fears are not specific to transgender people, but of anyone taking advantage of the law to commit a crime.
There are crazy people out there, and I just have the concern about other people acting up and being crazy about it and take advantage of it, and then people get hurt.
Felix's conflicting feelings about HB2 highlight some of the complicated conversations that have emerged across North Carolina this past year. What it means to be a woman, a man, and what science and our surroundings tell us about how gender identity develops through childhood.
For Felix, talking about gender with her young son has happened in small moments, like when he wants to play with dolls or other toys with specific gender associations. She lets him play with any. His gender also came up during a recent toddler milestone, potty training.
Sometimes either I take him or my husband takes him, and he'll see that my husband be standing up and I'll be sitting down when I take him. But then I started telling him, I'm like, you gotta stand up. It took him a while to understand what standing up has to do with.
For little Miguel, being taught that boys stand up is part of beginning to identify as a boy. But for many transgender kids, it's not that simple. One recent study estimates that 150,000 teenagers and 1.4 million adults identify as transgender in the United States.
And studies show that in contrast to their non-transgender peers, transgender kids are at a higher risk for mental illness, depression, anxiety, self-harm, and suicide.
What I've seen happen with HB2 is that this puts a lot more stress on these individuals because they can't even make a decision about going to the restroom. They can't go alone.
Dina Adkins directs the Duke Center for Child and Adolescent Gender Care in Durham. She's a pediatric endocrinologist whose patients include children born with genders that aren't completely obvious at birth, as well as kids who are transgender.
Children start to get messages about their gender from the time they are born. Is it a pink bow or blue overalls? Is the hair long or short? Adkins says kids form their gender identity early on, usually from the ages of 2 to 5.
And most parents will know this because they'll know that their child starts talking about boys and girls. And then there are some kids who realize that that age, that they are not a boy and they're not a girl, even though their parents have been saying that to them and the culture around them has been addressing them that way.
To better understand gender identity, Adkins says it helps to think of gender as a spectrum rather than two mutually exclusive categories. Not everyone's internal sense of self matches their assigned sex at birth. And when that happens, Adkins says, it can take a while for people to work through who they are.
People transition socially at different ages. People transition medically, which means usually hormones, at a different time. And then surgically, often much later.
That transition is a couple years in the making for Luke Duvey, the transgender teen we heard from at the beginning of the hour. Duvey is the youngest of 4 children. He's now 18, a high school senior, and a percussionist in the school's marching band. On a recent evening, Duvey pulled up a YouTube video of one of his favorite band performances. In it, he was still a girl. His name was Carolyn.
Watching the videos, especially because there's like so much in character with the performance going on, I don't really see myself so much as Carolyn then. I see myself as part of the group. And so I think like doing the percussion helped a lot because I didn't have to really change who I was, especially during those moments since we were all one and the same.
Outside of those performances, however, Duvi was changing. He was born a girl, but as a child always felt more like a boy. He hated wearing dresses, preferred his hair short, and had to get lessons from his older sister on how to act more girlish. By his sophomore year in high school, he told his mom, Jean, he identified as a boy.
Jean Duvi embraced her son immediately, though it wasn't always easy.
There were times that were really difficult. There was mourning the daughter that I thought I was going to have. You know, the white wedding, the being there when she was birthing children. So there were times I would have to cry.
But then one day, that changed. Jean says she remembers her son coming into her room for a snuggle.
It was still the same smell. It was still the same feel. It was still the same child. And once I could work through and mourn the dreams I had of having a daughter and start to build dreams of having a son, then it was perfect.
Luke and his mom became outspoken critics of House Bill 2, attending rallies and calling for legislation to repeal the law. But for all the public attention they've put on themselves and the issue of transgender rights, they both still fear for Luke's safety, especially when he walks into a men's bathroom. While he looks like a boy now, he hasn't had sex reassignment surgery yet.
There's always a little bit of fear. Some of it's kind of irrational, like, what if I walk into a bathroom and someone's like, hey, why are you going into a stall? Like, why were you in the stall for such a short time? There's always little fears like that that I know really won't go anywhere. But if they do, that's always the terrifying part.
Luke and Jean Duvi hope some of those fears pass when Luke has the surgery, which he hopes to do this summer.
And despite their safety concerns, they and other transgender advocates say speaking out is something they have to do.
Terry Phoenix directs the LGBTQ Center at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Phoenix says transgender visibility goes a long way toward minimizing misconceptions.
In some respects, the visibility of transgender individuals is going to help because if people start to get to know, well, you know, trans people are not this ogre that people are painting them out to be. I think people hopefully can learn, you know, if they're open to that, I think that they can learn that there are differences.
Those differences, Phoenix says, are easier for some people to understand than others.
People have been taught you're either a male or a female, as if it is a very, you know, clean cut, absolute fact that is determined at birth. And that there is never any variation on. And so, you know, if you start from that perspective, the idea of gender as a spectrum or the idea that gender identity exists apart from your assigned sex at birth, I think is really somewhat challenging to get your head around.
The conversation over transgender rights and bathroom bills is far from over in North Carolina. This winter, lawmakers failed to repeal House Bill 2, after two attempts at the state legislature.
And last week, the Duke Blue Devils had to play in South Carolina in the second round of the NCAA tournament. The game was initially scheduled for Greensboro, but was moved in response to HB2. UNC also played in South Carolina. Tar Heels basketball coach Roy Williams is one of the most recognizable people in the state. This week, he repeated calls for North Carolina legislators to do something about HB2.
I have a hard time figuring out why we think our law is what's right when 49 other states don't have that. You know, are we that much smarter than 49 other states?
But North Carolina may not be alone for long. Across the U.S., lawmakers in 16 other states have introduced similar bills that would require people to use the bathroom of their sex assigned at birth. Legislation in 13 of those states is pending. In three others, the legislation failed to pass. One of those high-profile bills is moving through the Texas state legislature. There, lawmakers are in the midst of passing a North Carolina-style bathroom bill that would require people to use bathrooms that correspond with the sex on their birth certificates. That bill has drawn backlash from big businesses, including Google, the National Football League, and the National Basketball Association, in much of the same way that businesses criticized House Bill 2 last year. But for now, North Carolina remains the only state to enact this type of legislation, and the controversy over public toilets may be part of America's latest culture war for years to come.
You've been listening to
2, A State Divided, HB2 and Transgender Rights, a special production of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. Reporters Jess Clark, Jason DeBruin, Rusty Jacobs, Jeff Tabiri, and Jorge Valencia contributed to this report. Robin Copley helped with music. Brent Wolf and Dave DeWitt edited the special. For extended reporting and photos, visit WUNC.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm your host and executive producer, Elizabeth Baer.